Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of an Easter ham brought to life by Frosty's magic hat to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the rhetorical question fallacy, also known as just asking questions.
So this is a way of basically accusing somebody of something without actually doing the accusing. It's right. a way of kind of trying to start a conversation, or often raise something that has already been debunked lots of times or has already been discussed and there is an actual answer for, but you're raising objections in a kind of in a questioning way and saying, well, I'm just asking questions, you know, I'm not accusing I'm not saying anything.
It's that plausible deniability thing, isn't it? It's all doing it at arm's length. Just say, I'm just saying, somebody should do something. Yeah.
And because of the initials of just asking questions, J-A-Q, it's has an informal term of jacking off with J-A-Q-ing off. So our first example from Trump this week is the reason actually that I picked this fallacy, because unbelievably, while everyone else is praising healthcare workers and going in the UK and I think around the world, going out in the streets and clapping for the healthcare workers, Trump is just accusing them of theft.
They've been delivering for years 10 to 20,000 masks. Okay, it's a New York hospital. It's packed all the time. How do you go from 10 to 20 to 300,000? 10 to 20,000 masks to 300,000, even though this is different. Something's going on. And you ought to look into it as reporters. Where are the masks going? Are they going out the back door?
There's something different. Even though there's something different. It's a respiratory thing that's transmitted by facial droplets coming out of your face. So you need to, that's the WHO definition. So you need to have a mask over your face.
So even though this is different to how everything normally is in hospitals, why would we need more masks? Now?
Could it be something to do with the fact that there are many, many more people and they're infected by a thing that's spread by facial droplets coming out of your face, which needs a mask, you know? If it was something to do with the hands, then you'd need more gloves.
Or the numbers, it won't surprise you to know, are unsourced.
Made up. Yes, of course. There
Let's
we
be
are.
Kind. Yeah, they're yeah, un- yeah. They're, they yeah. are supposedly
unverified.
From one person mentioned to Trump that this was a thing that they a request that they'd had from one hospital. This isn't something that is widespread. Everyone's upping their orders from 10 to 20,000 to 300,000. States, individual hospitals, healthcare areas are asking for more supplies because they need more supplies. Healthcare professionals are stealing masks.
No.
Because what would you even do with them? I mean,
well, yeah, carry small mice in them. I don't know.
The thing is, even the VA, even the hospitals are being run specifically by the federal government and therefore don't have to rely on states being able to get hold of masks and things like that.
Yeah.
The director of the VA hospital in LA said last week that although the administration is saying they have everything they need, they are restricting their doctors who are dealing on the front line with coronavirus patients to a single surgical mask per shift, not even an N95 respirator.
Whoa.
They don't have the supplies.
Wow. Yeah. So you might as well just make one out of a T-shirt all the difference that's going to make for the surgical stuff. That's just to stop you breathing into people's...
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it's not what they recommend is used in that situation. So...
Well, it's the same the world over. You know, the whole thing in the UK about the, central government saying, yes, we're doing everything we can to get stuff there as quick as we possibly can. And you think, well, you're not going to cure 10 years of underfunding overnight. And, the recommendations from a pandemic modelling exercise 2 years ago were not implemented. So you're going to be behind when it comes to delivering supplies of PPE, but at least the UK government isn't implying that the health workers are just putting them in their pockets, just stealing them.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is. So our second Trump example is a tweet that he sent on February 12th. He was responding to a tweet sent by Katie Fang saying that the judge presiding over a particular case was Amy Berman Jackson, who was the judge who had dealt with Paul Manafort. Trump responded, "Is this the judge that put Paul Manafort in solitary confinement, something that not even mobster Al Capone had to endure? How did she treat crooked Hillary Clinton? Just asking."
It's that kid thing, isn't it? A kid on Twitter or whatever. Just going to leave this here.
Yeah.
Just asking. Just going to leave that. Yeah.
So he's he is basically implying by just asking that this judge is biased against Republicans and is kind of biased towards Hillary Clinton. She did years ago dismiss a lawsuit brought against Hillary Clinton by the parents of the soldiers that died in Benghazi because in her view, there was not sufficient reason for the case to continue.
Yeah.
And she did.
I just disagreed with that.
Yeah. She did put Manafort in prison. She didn't put him in solitary confinement for a number of reasons. First of all, that's not a thing a judge can do.
Yeah. can't do that.
Yeah. The judge doesn't get to decide the conditions under which a prisoner will be kept in a prison. That's up to the warden and various other things. Yep. Also, Manafort wasn't in solitary confinement at all, at any point.
The answer to that bit is no.
No, absolutely. He was in a private cell. He didn't have a cellmate. He was separate from the general population because he was a celebrity, and that's kind of tends to be what they do. But he had a private cell. He had a private bathroom. He had a separate workspace that he was able to go to at basically any time he wanted and work with his lawyers. He had a phone and a laptop in his cell workspace. He was not in solitary confinement.
No, that's basically a room in a Trump hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
In fact, he emailed during the time he was in there that he was being treated like a VIP.
Yeah.
Which didn't do wonders for his case when his lawyers tried to claim that he was not being treated well. Came out. And
they just looked at the timestamp and went, hang on a minute, when you said this, you're allegedly being held in solitary confinement. Well, at least Trump's got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
That, solitary confinement means an individual presidential suite in the jail. So is that the direct counter of this kind of rhetorical question? Is just to say no. The answer to that is no.
In fact, there's a kind of jokey law about newspaper headlines called Betteridge's Law, which is that if a headline is presented as a question, usually it's just no.
Yeah.
So, and it's especially good with things like the Daily Mail. So where the question is, does cheese cure cancer? No.
Yeah.
No, that's not. And the reason is because if it did, the headline would be cheese cures cancer.
Cures cancer, yeah. Yeah. Oh, once that reminds me, I once encountered a guy that was begging for money on an underpass going under the road. So across the road, and he's like halfway along, and he said, "Do you have any change?" And I genuinely did not have any change. I said, and said that to him, "I genuinely don't have any change." And he went, "All right, blimey, that's, you know, that's no way to treat a beggar. I've got no money." And I said, "Wait a minute, just the fact that you posed the question, you ought to be able to, you know, kind of entertain the idea that the answer might be no."
Yeah.
If you said, "Give me your change," then there is no question. You know? And he just went, that is just not, it's not done. I said, "Well, then don't ask it as a question, because then you could get no or yes. You know, do you have any change? No. That's it. End of the transaction. You know, do you have any change? Yes, is a better outcome for you, but it's, you know, it's,
but that
it's
also doesn't lead to him necessarily getting the change. Because that's a fact basis. That's just, "Do you have any change? Yes, thanks very much. I've got plenty."
Yes. Yeah, because the real question is, can you give me your change? Yeah. Will you give me your change? Yeah. Even if you could be a bit pedantic. Can you give me your change? Well, I can, but I'm just not going to. Yeah, I am able. I have the capability of doing that. I'm just not going to go through with it. Yeah.
And yet they don't appreciate that.
Beggars. No. That's because you should follow beggars can't be choosers. So they ought not to give anyone a choice. So ergo, they should not ask a question. Well, we've just solved that. We've solved the whole of homelessness and poverty. Don't ask questions. Just take it.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, so I've got a couple of examples. One from the good old days, the run-up to the election last December. Ah, how we can bathe in the glory that was Brexit. And so this is the final hustings of the, just before that election, of Jeremy Corbyn and Boris head-to-head. And I'm having listened to it again just before we came on air, I've realised my cognitive bias is at play here. Except it's, you know, remember those talent shows where they have the clapometer and people clap and you work out who's won by the amount of clapping? There's a lot more clapping for Corbyn than there is for Boris. So finally, gentlemen, what would you like to say to the viewers of this programme? And Corbyn says something about this is the chance of a generation, an election to do this, this and this. And Boris just poses some rhetorical questions.
"This is a once-in-a-generation election to end privatisation and give the National Health Service the funding it needs, to give people the final say and get Brexit sorted, to tackle the climate emergency that threatens our futures, to invest in good jobs in every region and nation of our country. I ask that you vote for hope and vote for Labour on the 12th of December.
Our choice is very simple. We can get Brexit done, or we can spend another groundhog year with another referendum when Mr. Corbyn, you've heard tonight, cannot answer the fundamental question. Is he for Remain or Leave? And what price would he pay to secure Nicola Sturgeon's support to enter number 10? And if he can't answer those questions tonight, I don't think he's fit to lead our country."
So it's implying there in that, how much will he be willing to pay to get Nicola Sturgeon, who's the head of the Scottish National Party, support? Because he is implying that Corbyn is going to go into an allegiance with her in order to make up the numbers. And, you know, so he's just posed that question as a thing that could be the outcome of this without actually giving him the chance to answer it right there and then.
He's also assuming that Nicola Sturgeon's support is for sale, essentially.
Yeah, and it's not like there isn't a precedent for one political party to spend, say, $10 billion getting the numbers from maybe
someone
an
like
Irish
DUP,
party.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah. And now, who was that? Oh, that was Theresa May's Tory government. Yeah, who negated the fact that there was a problem with the housing market when she spent $10 billion to get into number 10, basically. So, yeah. And so the irony of that is, from the, you know, the benefit of the position we're in now, when you look back, is that Corbyn's, most of what Corbyn said he wanted to happen, you know, vote for me and you'll get all this, like the NHS being funded and not privatised, we're actually getting now, and because that's their emergency response to coronavirus. So if you can stand it, we'll put in the show notes, go and look at the whole debate. And it is quite an interesting game of ping pong, or whiff-waff, as Boris would describe it, because Corbyn answers the stuff based on their kind of well thought out and well funded and you know, not terribly left wing, but a social contract from their manifesto. Whereas Boris, every opportunity he gets, he does get Brexit done. He just shoves that in, and it worked. We know it worked because people just got Brexit done, and that's, you know,
kind of.
I mean, there are early examples.
Got
Brexit. Yeah, talked about. Okay, so our second example is friend of the show, Nigel Farage, arch conspiracy theorist and foreigner hater. He's thankfully not been on national TV at the moment, and he broadcasts on YouTube. He's got a YouTube channel, and this clip is from March 30th, so a couple of weeks ago. So that was 1 week into the lockdown, the national lockdown. And satisfyingly, it's only got 500,000 views, so nowhere near national TV viewing.
It's Monday, the 30th of March, and we hear the news today that Dominic Cummings, too, has come down with a coronavirus symptom. So it is there deep at the heart of government, and nobody, with the death toll rising, is underestimating that we're in a serious situation. But what has emerged over the weekend is a real dilemma, I think. And it's going to become a huge issue for the authorities. What is the lockdown for? What is the point of the restrictions that are being put on people? Is it to stop the spread of coronavirus, or is it to put us under house arrest? And I say that as somebody, I've now been here for 2 weeks. The vast majority of us recognise the fact this is a national emergency. We are all prepared to do our bit. You can tell that by the 700,000 people that have volunteered to get involved and help. But when it comes to social distancing, yeah, we get it, apart from a few idiots, we get it. But please, please, don't give the police excessive powers. Don't put us under house arrest. Otherwise, we'll lose all respect for you and for rules that could, applied properly, be very sensible indeed.
So he's got I'm at a loss, really. It's a 12-minute rant, basically. I've edited the beginning and the end together to save time, and you a lot of pain. And apart from some groundless rant about the Chinese involving a slippery slope that they end up with them being handed the keys to number 10, that's the gist of it. Except you kind of think, well, what is the gist? He's doing this thing where he's going, or is it that we're under house arrest? Da, da, da. and they think, well, what's your point? And he kind of hints at the fact that they're bringing in, you know, increased police powers, but he doesn't follow it through. And I think he's doing it in a fashion. It reminds me of Russ Tamblyn's character, Dr. Jacoby in Twin Peaks 3, who was broadcasting spittle-flecked rants about the system over the internet as a way to sell gold-sprayed shovels to dig yourselves out of the shit. And so his thing comes in the same way. It uses that notion that he who provides the panic also provides the pill. So he's selling something as a panacea for the panic that he is pointing out. And if you look at the comments on this thing, it's just, you can see it appealing to all the conspiracy theorists. They're going, yeah, I knew there was something. And you go, yeah, but what is it? What is the thing that he's talking about? It's kind of, he's not broadcasting so much, 500,000. Hell, we've reached 500,000 people. And
Have we?
Maybe. No. Maybe. No, okay.
Not quite. One day.
Yeah. Keep listening. People keep downloading. Get your friends to download. We could reach that. And you think, well, you know, we've got a purpose to our broadcast. And you think, what is his thing there? He's got nothing to do in politics anymore. He maintains that he was responsible for bringing about the referendum, for getting us out of Europe. He maintains that he was responsible for the Tories getting in because he stood his party down, the Brexit party. He maintains that his work is done, his job is done. And he maintains that he is the one that is dealing with the swampiness of politics, where he's a swampy politician. What is he ranting about now in the middle of this emergency response to the coronavirus? He shoves in, we're under house arrest. You're turning into David Icke. You know, he's kind of putting...
This fantasy is really common among conspiracy theorists because it's a great way of trying, arguably, to start a conversation about something which you don't have an answer for, because the answer you're trying to aim towards is ridiculous. So you have nothing to back it up. You have no evidence. You have nothing that you can point to. You can just ask questions about the kind of accepted story.
Yeah.
And one of the places it's used hugely is in the Loose Change, the 9/11 truther documentary. There's a ton of things about, you know, how did this happen? I'm not suggesting, I'm not accusing anyone, I'm just asking questions, that kind of thing happening in that. And yeah, it's a handy technique if you don't have answers.
It almost kind of contains shifting the burden of proof as well, doesn't it?
It was
a bit like Trump's thing. He said later on in the first example, he said, I think you should look into that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a question worth asking, isn't it? And you go, well, no. If you're posing that as a question, it's like, is this to deal with the coronavirus outbreak? Yes. Or is it we're under house arrest? No. That's the simple answer.
Straightforward.
You know. That'll be it. You know, how long's that? How long, 20 seconds. Yeah, you could cut your thing there. But it's worth watching. It's not worth watching the video. Just watch the video just to have a look at his house, because it's not what you expect. It's not nice. It's a kind of, it's a 1992 or 2000 built box of a house. He's sitting at the bottom of the stairs. And I tried to look past him, but couldn't, because he kept sitting in the way, to see whether his, you know, archetypal flat hat and wax jacket that he wears when he goes down the pub to prove he's one of the people. Nobody wears wax jackets and flat hats unless you're a politician. And that's hanging on the end of the staircase. He's sitting at the bottom of the stairs. He's by the door going, I'm under house arrest. Well, you're not, because you're not. That's not what it is.
Are your arguments shined? Does the logic seem right? Are you sunning your fantasies wild? Is your premise unsound? Your conclusions unfounded? Tell me, is your fantasy wild?
Here we go, Elf. Elvis Presley, and of course, Are You Lonesome Tonight? That fantastic rhetorical question.
Yeah. I love the little spoken bit in the middle of that song. I wonder if you're lonesome tonight.
Yeah.
One of my favourites.
Yeah. So, but actually, what's great is to do the counter argument to that all the way through and just say no to every answer. Yeah. Are you lonesome tonight? No. Just lift the record off. End of song. Done.
So, in the fantasy in the world, we like to talk about the fantasy of the week from a non-political perspective, and we'll a little slight way away from politics, because we start with the king of conspiracy theories, Glenn Beck, who is actually not as bad now as he used to be, but when he had his kind of, I don't know if it was daily or weekly show on Fox, it was a sight to behold.
Questions now have been raised about Obama's CIA nominee, by an ex-FBI agent who claims that the nominee for the CIA, John Brennan, is an Islamic convert with decades-old connections to the most anti-American variant of the religion. I will tell you, I don't know if this is true or not. I will tell you that there is so much in John Brennan's background that should be questioned, that this is plausible. Now, here's what the problem is. This is an FBI agent who is now in a tough spot. He's undercover, so he can't speak out, which leads people to say, well, that didn't even happen. It's a smear. Now, if somebody makes a charge like that, shouldn't we at least explore it before we put him as the chief of all intelligence? Don't wait with, don't wait for the media to come dig into this claim, because they're not going to, so don't hold your breath. It seems we can't ask reasonable questions anymore.
I love that when he says, it seems we can't ask reasonable questions anymore. Well, you're not. Asking reasonable questions. That's a Trump thing, isn't it? That's a Trump stuff. He said, and a Farage thing. He said, in that bit where he talks, when he's doing the Chinese bit, he's saying, oh, you can't say anything anymore, because you're being accused of racist. No, you just can't say racist things.
It's very much I thought this was America kind of thing.
Where, you know, surely we could just go round and burn people to death. You know, we used to be able to do that. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, we can't even wildly speculate on whether a CIA director is a secret Muslim anymore.
That whole thing, that whole setup, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. You have to kind of go, wait a minute, let me just run that at 0.75 speed just to get the levels of conspiracy. It's like going into Inception, isn't it? Because he goes, okay, he's being nominated, but he is the friend of someone who once heard a story about a Muslim who once said something that he didn't understand where America was, which means that he don't understand why he's being... And he got, what? Wait a minute. How did you get... You went all the way down there, drew a conclusion, and then said, but I think we should ask the question.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's true. I don't know if it's true. But
yeah,
but
it isn't.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But I think we should ask this question. Why? What? For what? For what reason?
This was Glenn Beck's MO. He asked these questions. He said, you know, how do we know that Obama isn't, you know, from Kenya and that kind of stuff? He didn't offer evidence in any way. He didn't try and make an argument. He just said, I think we should ask these questions. To the extent that it became, someone set up a website called Did Glenn Beck Rape and Murder a Young Girl in 1990.com.
Really?
And the website just said, we don't think so, but we should ask the question.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah.
And he did actually try and take them to court to get the website taken down, but the website owner won because, you know, it was a parody. It was just asking a question. So
yeah. On the beta, I was just asking a question. Yeah. So in asking the question, you absolve all responsibility. Well, there it is. It's been proved in law. You're legally not bound by the content of the question. You're not asserting that as a fact, you're just asking the question.
Yeah, I should say don't take legal advice for a podcast. But
oh, yeah.
But also...
No, there is that. Yeah. But I think the question should be asked. Case,
in that specific case, with that specific set of facts, yes, the website owner won. However, yeah, it has been argued that you can't get away with libel in, for example, a newspaper headline.
Ah.
You can't use the fact that it's a question as a defence when essentially what you're saying is, we think it might be.
We think it was him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We think these questions should be asked. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there is legal precedent on both sides.
Okay. Yeah.
Our second example is from South Park, and it's kind of a bit of a cheat because this is Cartman doing a spot-on parody of Glenn Beck. This is an episode from season 13 where Cartman, through a series of misadventures, took over the morning announcements in South Park Elementary and evolved from just reading the announcements into a kind of Glenn Beck-style show. So I've got a couple of short clips. The first one is he is questioning the leadership of the student president, Wendy Testerberger.
I'm just a normal kid, like you, except that I ask questions. And because I'm brave enough to ask questions, I come under scrutinies. Is Wendy using your lunch money to buy heroin? Probably not. But how can we know? I don't want my lunch money going to drugs. Who's taking these drugs? What would be the point? I'm asking questions.
So, and he becomes kind of, you know, South Park famous through doing this and ends up with a book deal where he's written a book about Wendy. And Stan confronts him about this.
I looked through your stupid book. It's 540 pages of ripping on Wendy and calling her a slut. I do not directly say she's a slut. Wendy Testerberger has proven time and time again that she will do anything to pleasure her vagina. Whether it is the school football team or the janitors on their break, Wendy spends her time as president on her knees or on her back, taking the old in out for hours on end. You didn't read the rest, dude. Or does she?
Or does she?
See, that's a question. I'm asking questions, Dan!
Yeah, see, it's a question. You have to read all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Or is she? Yeah. yes. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and Cartman is demonstrating that in theory, at least with this fallacy, you can get away with saying absolutely anything you want about someone, providing you phrase it as a question.
And it is the most heinous thing to do. Because you're kind of making these horrendous, unfounded, libelous accusations and then going, oh, yeah, well, it's nothing to do with me. I'm just asking questions. And then your defense is that I thought this was America, where you could ask questions. It becomes as a meta thing. You've got double immunity because, A, it's a question, and then you can object to people stopping you asking questions. And said, well, no, you're not asking questions. What you're doing is making a libelous accusation.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just putting a question mark at the end. You know, we'd know that this was happening in Spain because there would be an upside down one at the beginning. But that, you know, that so we have to wait all the way through your libelous accusation for you to get the questioning intonation at the end.
You know, or do we?
Or do we? Yeah. So example number three, we referenced Dr. Jacoby from Twin Peaks as Farage's role model for these kind of insane rants. So I thought it'd be good to actually hear one of his insane rants.
Read what's on the box. In fact, read between the lines. What's lurking in that toaster waffle, those muffins, that frozen children's treat? Poison. Deadly poisons. That's what's there. And what's waiting for you? Cancer! Leukemia! Autoimmune disorders! Pulmonary embolism! Warts! Psoriasis! Eczema! Cardiac arrest! Where are the cops when we need them?
It's so good. And he just gets so excited that he has to drink something to calm himself down, and then you realize that what he's doing is just selling the stuff he drinks. Then he says, what you need to be able to see all this stuff is a cosmic torch. Luckily, I've got one, and he sells a cosmic torch. It's just a flashlight with wings on it that he's stuck on. And then he's also selling these golden shovels that he's just sprayed. So people have just literally lapped this stuff up. They buy into this thing. It's great. It is great. And it's from a podcaster's point of view, it's great to watch him because all the kit is exactly the same as what we've got. And he's got a little, except there's this wonderful thing with string when he just kind of pulls the thing and this huge shovel just swings into view and he hits it with a hammer. And then he cues another video and plays that in. It's brilliant. It's so kind of low tech.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
So what I want to know is, why do I never win this? What's the conspiracy behind that? And what is it? What are you gaining from this? I think these questions should be asked. There's obviously some deliberate thing going on, or is there?
Yeah, so the deliberate thing that's going on is I'm just better at this than you. That's the answer. And
But also, to be fair,
just not getting basically, it right. Yeah. I'm like the house in a casino because the odds are in my favour because there's three clips and you have to choose the right one out of three. So, I'm always going to win, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing currently better than chance. You're on 19 out of 46. So,
oh, right. You know, that's been a long good. Time coming. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think this question should be asked. Yeah.
So these are all from the nightly Trump rally, coronavirus pandemic briefings that Trump is
the
doing.
The TV show,
which some TV channels like CNN are kind of carrying a part of and then cutting away to do fact checks, which is really pissing off the Trump administration.
But
he's basically using them as kind of 2-hour rants about how great he is and how unfair the press is to him. There's very, very little information about coronavirus in there.
No.
It's quite surprisingly... Well, no, it's not surprising at all. It's exactly what we expect from Trump. Yeah. So, yeah, statement number one this week is, by the way, the models show hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. You know what I want to do? I want to come away under the models. The professionals did the models. I was never involved in a model. At least, not this kind of model. But you know what? Hundreds of thousands of people, they say, are going to die. I want much less than that. I want none. But it's too late for that.
He even manages to get a slight gag in there. How awful is that? There are people that... The first line says, by the way, incidentally, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. And do you know what? I'm just going to make a gag about being involved with a model.
So
that is just Jesus Christ. That's reprehensible, isn't it?
Statement number two. Okay. After he learned that Boris Johnson had gone into intensive care.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said, I've asked two of the leading companies. These are brilliant companies, Ebola, AIDS, others. They've come with the solutions and just have done incredible jobs. Yeah. And I've asked them to contact London immediately. They have offices in London. They're major companies, but more than major, more than size, they're genius. I had a talk with four of them today, and they speak a language that most people don't even understand. But I understand something, that they've really advanced therapeutics and therapeutically, and they have arrived in London already. At no point did he go on to explain who these companies were or what they did or anything like that.
No. Okay. So he's made up the companies. He's made up that they've contacted London and that they have London offices in London and they're already there. Well, if they've got offices, what the fuck is he talking about? And in there he said, I understand something. Well, many people have said, how come you understand as much as you do? I should have been a doctor. Yeah, instead of going into politics. Yes, we're with you there.
Statement number three.
Yeah.
Is, okay. What we're doing is we're developing a self-swab, and the doctors, the brilliant doctors we have here, they're seeing if the self-swab is as good as the other kind of swab. The self-swab is a self-swab, so it's a swab you do yourself. The current version, a doctor has to do it, and it's not a nice thing to have done. I know, because I had it done. So if you do it yourself with a self-swab, I think that will be better, personally.
Right. Well, we know he hasn't had it done. So, yeah. Okay. Right. Ah, no. I like that. It's a self-swab, so it's a swab you do yourself. See, that's a gym-sized gag as well as anything else. And the model's gag, I want him to say that. Okay. They're more than major, more than size, they're genius. Right, I think that number two is the one you made up.
Okay, so
yeah,
of the other two,
yeah,
which gag, the model gag or the self-swerve gag, do you think he said?
I think the model one.
Okay.
He probably said.
So statement one is?
Yeah, yeah.
Real.
Yeah. No.
Now, by the way, the model show, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. You know what I want to do? I want to come way under the models. The professionals did the models. I was never involved in a model. But at least this kind of a model. But you know what? Hundreds of thousands of people, they say, they're gonna die. I want much less than that. I want none. But it's too late for that.
But that's not reassuring in any way at all, is it?
No.
Well, I want much less than that. It doesn't matter what you want. I want much less than that. I want none. But yeah, but it's too late for that. Because, no, yeah, exactly. Because whilst you were saying we've got it under control, it went up the exponential curve. That's, whoa.
Yeah.
I think he was a bit disappointed that at least this kind of model didn't go down well. Uh-huh. It's a tough crowd. Not the usual Vegas crowd.
So straight back into hundreds of thousands of people going to die.
Yeah. How did they say? Well, what are they? They're professionals. You know. All right, what a couple of the professionals did the models. Yes, the professionals did. Doesn't, which
what
means
he needed
you're not
to really sell to that gag was a kind of groucho cigar and
eyebrow
waggle.
Exactly.
At least not this kind of model.
That's exactly that. And, you know, sort of like Rita Hayworth or somebody standing next to him. Yeah. And he could kind of waggle the tails of his coat.
You know, I like models, but yeah.
Not this kind of model. Never been older than a model. At least not this kind of a model. Yeah.
God.
Exactly. And then Harpo would just go, honk, next to him. Quite. Or Pence, as we call him. Yeah.
So you also think that number three is real? And number three...
I'm beginning to lose faith.
Is?
Yeah.
Fake news.
Oh, nice work. I was right. It was a gym-sized gag.
Self-swab.
God
that you
damn
do yourself.
You.
He God did. He it. Did announce that they're working on a self-swab, and he did seem to say self-swab a hell of a lot. But it was a lot more kind of stretched out, and there was less, less tautologies.
Nice work. Yeah. And that whole thing is just, the current version of the doctor has to do it. It's not a nice thing to have done. I know because I had it done. There you go. That's the convincing bit because we know that he hasn't had it done. And then you've got it in there. You do it yourself with a self swab. I think that would be better personally. So it's just self referential. Uh-huh. That's brilliant. Oh, so, very good indeed.
Which means that number two.
No, that means that one's real. Oh my God.
And I've asked two of the leading companies. These are brilliant companies. Ebola, AIDS, others, they've come with the solutions and just have done incredible jobs. And I've asked them to contact London immediately. They have offices in London, the major companies, but more than major, more than size, they're genius. And I had a talk with four of them today. and they speak a language that most people don't even understand. But I understand something, that they've really advanced therapeutics and therapeutically, and they have arrived in London already.
Elements of medical.
He's not sent doctors, he's sent companies. Yeah. Two of the leading companies, no names.
Who speak a language most people don't understand.
He's talked. He's had a talk with four of them. Yeah. But only sent two. And they've been sent to London. They've had to contact London. They have offices in London, and they've arrived in London already. Probably because they've already got offices.
They've got offices there. Yeah. They've arrived 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Because one of them is Beecham's. Yeah.
So and they've really advanced therapeutics and therapeutically.
And therapeutically themselves, they've advanced. Well, maybe that's because they just do mindfulness at work. So it's a very therapeutic work environment. When you go there, you feel really good about working in a comfortable office with people going, hey, good job, and that kind of stuff. So you feel buoyed up. Therapeutically, it's a good place to work. And whilst there, he's just discovered some new words, hasn't he? That's right. Those are the elements of medical that he was missing from the last thing.
I think the thing is, what he has a tendency to do is when he reads something wrong, he will pretend that he meant to say that and then say and the thing he meant to say.
So he
talked about something like securing their furniture and their future at one point, which was really bizarre. But the thing is, it doesn't make sense if he just said they've advanced therapeutically. That doesn't make sense either.
No.
So I'm not sure what he was going for that he misread, and then I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really.
Yeah. And it's just, who are these people? And did they actually ring up Boris, given the fact that they speak a language most people don't even understand? Well, he's
that wouldn't
talking
have been
about
very
the
helpful,
Chinese.
Frankly.
No, if not helpful at all.
If the,
you know, they
if
rang him up.
If they rang up St. Thomas's Hospital and said, look, we know you've got Boris in there, but said it in a language that they didn't understand, it would.
I didn't understand. They'd just go, I've just got a phone call, but I think it's a fax machine. I don't know what it is. You know, can you make sense of this? No. It sounds like the loading sound from a 1980s computer game. What is that? And they say, oh, we need to slow it down. It's obviously some alien broadcast. Jesus Christ.
Which means that, unfortunately, you did not. You've broken your win streak.
It was very good. Because we just get to listen to two stupid things, and then one stupid thing, which he didn't say. That's how I'm doing. I'm looking at it the other way around. There are three stupid things.
Yeah.
One of which
that's what I'm going for.
Say,
yeah.
To relieve you of the fact that he's not actually said that out loud
so far
to the public. Yeah.
Yeah.
So far, I know. Well, that's the other thing, because what you're doing on the side, or has he? You're doing on the side is writing his speeches and just sending them up. You preview them on here, see if they work. And if I get it and go, that's a good one. I'll send that to him. So people are convinced it's him. Yeah, many people have said.
It's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called Hydroxychloroquine is not a logical fallacy. And I've been practicing saying hydroxychloroquine probably more than Trump. I don't know, because he doesn't seem to have stumbled
he doesn't
a lot
practice
on
it.
And it is
at all.
By far the longest word he's ever said.
Ever said. So many syllables.
Yeah. I reckon he's like at night just looking in the mirror going, hydroxychloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, hydroxychloroquine. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about hydroxychloroquine is that Trump and members of the administration seem really intent on pushing it as a kind of therapy. And there's a lot of back and forth on social media, particularly claiming that Democrats and liberals want it not to work and will be really happy if it turns out to be rubbish, and every bit of evidence, every anecdote that says, look, people are having success with it, people are saying, see, Trump knew, and there's loads of fallacies in there. And the situation is everybody wants there to be a successful medicine for this. Everybody wants there to be a solution that will make people better and stop so many people dying.
Yeah.
Nobody...
That's kind of a given, really.
Yeah. Nobody is saying that this isn't it, that hydroxychloroquine isn't a potential answer. What people are saying is it is way too early to be saying you should use this. Yeah. It is... As if it's been
tested and approved. Exactly. And
So what we're saying is it is irresponsible of Trump, with the platform he has as the leader of the free world, to be saying, just try it, you know, what do you get to lose? Because
And also saying that other people are trying to stop you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of worse, because it's his... That's the rhetorical question. So why are these people not letting you use it?
Yeah.
You know, and he's shifting all the blame and all that stuff. He's kind of stirring up that panic, and at the same time, providing the pill, as chloroquine. I mean, one ought to, in all of these things, look where the money is. I mean, has he got...
He does. He does have a personal financial stake in Sanofi, who make Plaquenil, which is brand name for hydroxychloroquine. Right. There, it is a especially if he is genuinely a billionaire, it's a trivially small amount of money. So, you know, we could do the just asking questions thing and say, well, is that why he's pushing it? we don't know. Who can tell? Probably not. Realistically, the chances are that he's pushing it because a miracle cure sounds good. And if he's saying, look, we can fix it, we've got it, we've sorted it out, then that will make people think that he's doing a better job.
Will be forgotten.
So, and because he's a snake oil salesman, that's what he does. And this is a miracle cure. So, you know, it's just his natural environment. But that there are reasons why, at the moment, it is still sensible to be cautious about this. Mm. And among those reasons are the fact that it causes shortages. Because as soon as he went on TV and said, you should use this, there've been some, you know, useful tests on it, people started trying to use it. And this drug is used for stuff. It's used for malaria. Which all of the people who got sent home from being in the Peace Corps because they needed to be at home instead of out potentially catching coronavirus needed to be taking it so that because you need to take it after you've been in a place where there might be malaria to make sure you don't get it. And
isn't it also a treatment for lupus?
It's for lupus, it's for arthritis. Yep. There's various things that people rely on it for. And there was enough for those people, and then suddenly there wasn't enough for those people.
Yes.
So that's bad. That is becoming less of an issue as companies are making more of it in response to the demand for it. So that's not now so much of an issue. But just because it has been shown to be helpful for those kinds of conditions, what that means is that the side effects that you might get from it are not as bad as the thing that you have if you don't take it. So there is a balance of whether having lupus or the symptoms of lupus are as bad as the side effects that you might get if you take hydroxychloroquine. Yeah. Yeah. And that balance is taken into account when it's prescribed.
Yeah.
For most people, they're not going to get coronavirus, or if they do, they're not going to get bad symptoms. It's not going to cause big problems for them. So people who are trying to take it prophylactically probably are getting side effects, or at least risking side effects, which include things like sudden cardiac death, which isn't good, without getting necessarily any benefit from it. Yeah. So it's not worth those risks necessarily for everybody.
Yeah.
Interestingly, that side effect of sudden cardiac death is quite rare, but it's increased when you take it with azithromycin, which has been suggested is a combination that you should be taking for coronavirus. Right. So that's, again, not necessarily a good thing to be doing. But there's lots of other side effects, loss of peripheral vision, crippling headaches, all kinds of things that, that might cause people to actually not want to do this. There's also the fact that the people who are most in danger from coronavirus are people with underlying conditions. And those people with those conditions might be taking other drugs. And you can't necessarily mix all drugs together. There are contraindications. If you try and if you take taking one drug and then you try and add hydroxychloroquine, it might not work with that. It might cause problems that you wouldn't otherwise have. It's a lot more complicated than just saying if you have or think you might have or worry that you might get or are having problems with coronavirus, just take this. It's worth a
and
go.
And just and just the basis of and what is that based on, and also how many you're supposed to take, how often, when, in combination with what, you know, that when when you take antibiotics, last time I took antibiotics, you know, several years ago, the when it says read the thing, and you read the thing, and the it says, you know, do this, this is how you take it, eat it with food, blah, blah, blah. And then the rest of the paper, which folds out to, you know, full scap, is contraindications.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, don't take it if you're taking this, 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 or if you're susceptible to this, that, and the other, or if you're, you know, sensitive to these things, just don't take it. You, and here are the contraindications that you might experience, and if you do experience these, stop taking it. And to and you have faith therefore that this has been tested against all sorts of other drugs under lots of circumstances, so much so that they can write down what all the contraindications are, and you therefore trust in its efficacy when it's going to work. If you, where you've got a snake oil salesman that isn't a doctor, though many people have said, how do you know all this stuff? No, many people haven't. You just made that up. That if, for him to say, oh yeah, just take it, this is the thing, and they're stopping you taking it. Well, they're not stopping you taking it. It's just that they're advising you don't, because we haven't tested it. This is a brand new disease. We're testing all sorts of things against it. We're throwing the kitchen sink at it, and we don't yet know which ones are the effective things. So,
and that,
you know,
and that throwing the kitchen sink at it is almost a direct quote from one of the doctors that was interviewed in a, in an article about this. In a way where he was saying, what we're doing, we're throwing the kitchen sink at this disease, and so we don't know what is helping. If people get better, you know, because this is based on anecdotes. This is based on people trying it and some people getting better. And the thing is, with this disease, some people get better. So, and that may be because they were going to get better anyway. And that's why you do trials. That's why you do some placebo, double-blind, large-scale clinical trials, is because then you can tell how many people would have got better on their own and how many people would have got better if they had the drug. And using anecdotes for that and saying, well, I gave these people this drug and they got better, does not tell you what you need to know, especially if it's not all you're doing for them. If you're also putting them on ventilators, if you're also giving them different drugs and you know, treating them in various ways and they get better, you still don't know if it was anything you did or if they were going to get better anyway. And at the moment, the studies that have been done, the small scale French study that has been cited by Trump and by various of his supporters, it was published in the International Journal of Antimicrobial Agents, and it was an open label, non randomized, small scale trial, and they are now going back on publishing it. They are now saying concerns have been raised. We're looking into it. We're not sure that this this study actually met our expected standards to be published
small.
In
it
the
was
journal.
Really small, wasn't it? It was like 20 odd.
It was a very I don't know the numbers actually. I don't, but it was small, and it's not enough to base a suggestion to take this drug on. Hospitals in France are stopping using hydroxychloroquine because they are seeing lots of side effects. Hospitals in Sweden are stopping because of side effects. It may be a good drug. It may be our best option. One of the other studies that is cited, it's not even a study, it's basically a survey, an international survey of doctors saying, you know, what is the best thing to use. It came out top in that survey, but it came out top because 37% of doctors said it's the best we've got. 32% of doctors said nothing, we don't have anything. So it's a little better than nothing at all.
But it's still an appeal to numbers.
Nothing doesn't have side effects. And it is based on anecdote. And in Trump's case, it's based on anecdotes that are being pushed to him by people like Dr. Oz, who is the like king's snake oil salesman. Giuliani, who claims that when you're a good litigator, you get to be an instant expert on various things. Argument, you know, jury's out on whether he's a good litigator. And Peter Navarro, economist, who's the only economist in the world who agrees with Trump on trade deals, he claims that because he has a PhD in economics, that he understands how to read statistical papers and like medical journals.
Well, there's all sorts of fallacies in there.
Absolutely. These are the people who are pushing this to Trump and saying, look, it works, you should tell people to use it. The people like Dr. Anthony Fauci are saying it's unproven, we shouldn't be telling people to do it yet. We need to do studies, we need to check into it. Maybe it's going to be great, but we're not there yet. And that, for people saying Democrats want this to be wrong because Trump says it's right, is what the situation is. Maybe it's right. Maybe it's going to turn out to be the best thing, but we're not there yet.
And it's pharmaceuticals and not politics. It's medicine. It's not something that can be affected. The efficacy of it isn't down to the Democrats want Trump to be wrong. That's like saying, you know, this is all about the impeachment. This is, you know, the whole coronavirus thing is a conspiracy by the Democrats because they failed to impeach Trump.
Yeah.
You know, it's on that kind of ridiculous basis. It's not about politics. It's completely indiscriminate. It's a virus. It doesn't know who's in charge.
We want to leave the house just as much as everyone else does.
Yeah.
We want this to be over. We want less people to die. And we want normal life to resume as quickly as possible. If it turns out that this is a good solution, it doesn't matter. We're not going to say, well, we shouldn't use it because Trump said it was good.
Yeah.
But let's actually test it first. Let's see if it works and see if it's safe and see if it's something that we should put more research in and more money into.
Yeah, and not politicize and not accuse the opposition of politicizing it, which is actually disguising the fact that you, Trump, are politicizing it to your own ends. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Trump's son-in-law and sad Victorian ghost, Jared Kushner, weighed in on one of the daily Trump rallies, press briefings last week, to explain the purpose of the Strategic National Stockpile, saying, "The notion of the federal stockpile was it's supposed to be our stockpile. It's not supposed to be the state stockpiles that they then use." Well, I don't know what Jared sounds like, but that's what he looks like.
Perfect.
While most of us tried to figure out who gets to use the masks and ventilators, if not the people in the states, whoever runs the Department of Health and Human Services website was busy updating it to remove the bits that directly contradicted what Kush just said.
Whoa!
Among the text removed was the suggestion that when state, local, tribal and territorial responders request federal assistance to support their response efforts, the stockpile ensures that the right medicines and supplies get to those who need them most during an emergency. Yeah, that kind of crazy socialist bullshit doesn't belong on a federal government website.
Nah. We all know how upsetting the numbers associated with coronavirus can be difficult to come to terms with, let alone write about. But not for TV whore Trump. He loves them, the ratings, that is. He tweeted twice on Tuesday, the 29th of March, that his ratings were as high as the season finale of The Bachelor and Monday Night Football. And again on the Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, saying stuff like...
Because the TV ratings for the White House news conferences are the highest, the opposition party... lamestream media, the radical left, do-nothing Democrats, and of course the few remaining rhinos are doing everything in their power to disparage and end them. The people's voice.
As if the important thing was the presses and not the scientific facts and government-led response to ameliorate deaths and impoverishment and economy crashing. The sensible grown-up people's voice, the Washington Post, was saying he really ought not to be participating in the briefings at all. He's so goddamn misleading. Like Penn distracting you away from what Teller is doing by being a clown as your watch gets removed. Still... as long as Trump's happy, now that his stage envy of the spiky little virus dude has subsided, that's all that matters.
During one of Trump's daily rallies, press briefings last week, the administration announced a projected death toll of 100 to 240,000 people in the US, which they compared to the worst-case scenarios from Imperial College in the UK, which said if the US did nothing at all, it could see 1.1 to 2 million deaths, which surely suggests Trump's re-election slogan will be Trump 2020, better than nothing, which is still clearly false. Anyway... the White House was unwilling to say how they came about these numbers. One epidemiologist whose studies were cited says his work doesn't go far enough to make those kinds of predictions, and even corona guru Anthony Fauci said there are too many variables to model. The closest scientific figures seem to be from an institute from health metrics and evaluation from the University of Washington, but their figures were based on all states imposing strict stay-at-home orders, which some are still not doing. Yesterday, Fauci said we might be looking at 60,000 deaths instead, based on a new projection from the IHME. But when you actually look at the IHME website, the graph shows a margin of error, which runs from 26,000 to 155,000 deaths. Whoa. Which, when you're talking about people dying, is a pretty fucking big margin of error, if you ask me.
Yes, you wouldn't want to make that mistake, would you? Just when we thought we could look forward to not having to look at the rectum-wrinkled presidential face hole for much longer because of the White House-sanctioned edict to wear masks against the possibility of catching or spreading coronavirus, Trump blithely says, "Nah, not for me. It's voluntary. I ain't doing it. If I don't want to meet kings and presidents and dictators wearing a mask, A, even Melania..." We can still see your eyes over the mask, Melania. Blink twice for rescue me. Tweeted the advice coming from the CDC as measures to cut down transmission in crowded areas where social distancing is difficult, particularly as you may be infectious without displaying symptoms. And B, no one's coming to see you, Donnie, and no one wants your pestilential spittle mouth loose tooth Satsuma Rhine Fizzog in their countries either. Oh, and again, it's not about you. It's about leading by example. Oh, what's the use? It's never going to happen, is it?
Among the various Republican senators finding ways to profit off the coronapocalypse, one stands out as particularly shitty. Freshman Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler is on the Senate Health Committee. And on January 24th, they got a private briefing about the seriousness of the coronavirus. The same day, she and her husband started dumping stocks in various companies and continued doing so throughout February, all while Trump and Loeffler herself were telling everyone it was all under control. Loeffler sold more than $18 million of stocks, including retail stores such as TJ Maxx, before lockdowns were in place. She also sold stock in an international travel brand the day before Trump announced his European travel ban. In fact, the only stocks Loeffler and her husband bought during this period were in DuPont, which makes PPE for healthcare workers, and Citrix, a technology company which makes teleconferencing software. Loeffler denies insider trading and says that in order to move past the distraction, she and her husband will liquidate all their remaining stocks. So she's going to keep all the money, and that makes it okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Trump got a bit mad at Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader, and a Democrat, you'll remember, basically for being a Democrat and for suggesting that Peter Navarro might be replaced as coordinator of the Defense Production Act because, well, he's no good at it. And, of course, when Trump gets angry, he's a bit like a Peanuts character. He sits on the floor at a small desk, feet sticking up from his outstretched legs in front of him, puts his tongue out the corner of his mouth, grasps the biggest, blackest crayon he can find and fires off a letter telling Schumer how many people have said Pence is doing a spectacular job. No, they haven't. And reminding Schumer how much stuff he has given New York. Many things, including hospitals, medical centres, medical supplies, record number of ventilators and more. And of course, Schumer should just shut up and be grateful and not question the manner in which it's been given, i.e. late, hesitantly, with caveats and blame sprayed around because it's not being done right and making it all Schumer's fault. It's a letter one would write to someone who had embarrassed you in seventh grade, saying how it was all their fault and you're better than them, so no, and then never sending it, but folding it up and tucking it in the back of your locker and looking at it whenever they walk by and sniggering as if doing that would make them die. However, Trump's seventh grader scribbles will go into the grown-up worlds of the presidential archive, possibly unfolded, for future generations to gaze at in awe and ask, what did you do during the virus, Grandpa? Oh, I folded Trump in again in November of that year, son.
Brett Crozier, captain of the aircraft carrier the USS Theodore Roosevelt, sent an email a couple of weeks ago. Dozens of sailors on board had tested positive for coronavirus, and Crozier was worried that it would spread rapidly among the 5,000-strong crew, which he thought might be bad. Since the Navy didn't seem to want to do anything about it, and since his immediate superior wouldn't have allowed a letter to be sent up the chain of command, Crozier emailed about 30 other Navy aviators, and the email leaked to the press. As of yesterday, 416 crew members had contracted the virus, and of course Crozier was hailed by all as a hero. Oh, no, wait. The Navy relieved him of his duty, and the acting Navy Secretary, Thomas Modley, addressed the Roosevelt's crew, calling Crozier either too naive or too stupid to command a ship. Some crew members recorded that and put it on social media. Modley has since resigned, and Trump has, of course, backed Modley. Because that's the world we're living in.
Yep. Over here, our vainglorious leader, Boris, got the actual pox and was self-isolating next door to number 10 whilst deteriorating but still running the country via the internet. Sound familiar, America? But he didn't get any better. And for a while, the country was conflicted about whether it would be good for the NHS if he died or if he recovered. If you just think about the office of Prime Minister, then it's a terrifying prospect that the leader of a free world country should die. But you put Boris back in the frame and, well, his government seemed to be surprised that they're able to continue without him, saying he'll pull through, he's a fighter, and then turning quickly to a scientist to explain things. Meanwhile, the newly trusted BBC broadcasted the presenter of the late night news programme that Boris refused to appear on, and she said how you can't get well by grit and strength of character alone. The implication of such language being that, of course, if you do get ill and don't get better and die, you are weak and deserve it. And that COVID isn't a great leveller. If you live in a crowded and poor area, you're more likely to get it and die than if you're all wealthy and get access to preferential treatment and testing and so on. COVID doesn't discriminate. Governments do.
That's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. You can find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump.
You can connect with us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Freshman Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler is on the Senate Health Committee. And on Janet... On Janet? What the hell was that?
Janet 24th.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.